Picture Manchester City's 2011 season hanging in the balance. Roberto Mancini, the old-school Italian manager, receives data showing that in-swinging corners score more goals than outswingers. He dismisses it. Decades of playing experience told him otherwise. Yet reluctantly, he makes the change. City wins their first Premier League title in 44 years. This moment captures soccer's uncomfortable relationship with reality. The world's most beloved sport has been run by people who prefer gut instinct to evidence, tradition to innovation, and comfortable failure to uncomfortable success. While Billie Bean revolutionized baseball with statistics, soccer remained stubbornly resistant. Until recently, the beautiful game is finally developing its analytical dashboard, revealing uncomfortable truths about how the sport actually works versus how we imagine it does. Clubs spent $48.5 billion on international transfers in a decade, yet transfer spending barely predicts league standings. What does? Wage bills. Over 90% of variation in league positions correlates with salary expenditure, not because high pay causes good performance, but because it attracts superior talent. Manchester City can afford Kevin De Bruyne's wages. Burnley cannot. The transfer market suffers spectacular inefficiencies. New managers routinely waste millions clearing out predecessors' players. Paolo Di Canio's six-month Sunderland tenure exemplifies this. He spent $30 million, brought in 14 players, let 15 leave, and left the club in last place. Players who shine in major tournaments command inflated prices despite limited evidence. Arsenal bought John Jensen after Euro 1992 as a goal-scoring midfielder based on one spectacular final goal. He scored exactly one goal in four Arsenal seasons. One English club discovered their scouts disproportionately recommended blonde youth players simply because they visually stood out, mirroring baseball scouts' sight-based prejudices, favoring handsome, athletic specimens while dismissing anyone who didn't fit the mold. Elite clubs routinely paid millions for players, then abandoned them at arrival. George Best nearly quit Manchester United when no one met him at Liverpool docks. Gary Lineker spent 4 months in a Barcelona hotel room. Nicolas Anelka's $35 million Real Madrid transfer left him without a locker. Didier Drogba's family lived in hotels for weeks after his $44 million Chelsea move while he house-hunted after practice. The problem extends beyond the player. As defender Tyrone Mears noted, sometimes it's not a problem of the player adapting. A lot of the times, it's the family adapting. When Georgi Kinkladze's performance improved only after his mother arrived with Georgian food, clubs learned that family matters. Manchester City transformed this after Robinho's $55 million failure. Their player care department now researches habits and partners' preferences before signing. Kevin De Bruyne settled in 3 hours. Sergio Aguero moved into his own home within 2 weeks, then scored 30 goals his first season. This isn't rocket science. It's basic human consideration most clubs historically ignored. FC Barcelona's 2018-2019 revenue of €841 million sounds impressive until you realize it's just 4% of United Natural Foods revenue, a company that doesn't even make the S&P 500. Manchester United's $2.2 billion market capitalization falls far short of the $7.25 billion needed for that index. Soccer isn't big business. It's small business masquerading as big business. Worse, it's historically been terrible business. In the 1960s and 70s, clubs paid sportswear companies to supply their clothing, not realizing the advertising value. Almost every revenue innovation, replica shirts, television rights, corporate boxes, came from outside the industry. Hiring practices remain absurdly casual, with managers hired within days through WhatsApp conversations. The ideal candidate has always been a white male former player between 35 to 60 with conservative hair, a profile ensuring clubs fail in the traditional way. Yet despite chronic mismanagement, soccer clubs prove remarkably resilient. While Lehman Brothers collapsed, 97% of the 88 teams in the 1923 English Football League still existed in 2021-2022. soccer clubs survive through mechanisms like phoenixing, dissolving an indebted company, and creating a new one that inherits the club's identity but not its debts. On April 18, 2021, 12 of Europe's biggest clubs announced the European Super League, a closed competition guaranteeing founding members permanent spots regardless of performance. Backed by $4.8 billion from JP Morgan, it promised lucrative matchups between giants like Messi and Kane. Despite careful planning, the league collapsed within 48 hours following unprecedented fan protests. The league embodied neoliberalism in soccer, treating the sport as pure business like American leagues with no promotion or relegation. European fans reject this model, viewing club owners as stewards serving fans, not profit maximizers. The Super League threatened soccer's twin foundations: tradition, familiar colors, grounds, competitions, and competition, promotion, relegation, giving even small clubs hope. The failure stemmed partly from soccer's cognitive problems. Many architects weren't selected for brains, but family names, like Andrea Agnelli of Juventus, whose family has run the club since 1923. Isolated in mansions and detached from fans, these owners never built public support beforehand. The 2021 debacle demonstrated that even in soccer, rich people don't always get what they want. Liverpool's 2015 hiring of Jurgen Klopp seemed questionable. His Dortmund had just finished seventh. But director of research Ian Graham, a Cambridge physics PhD, revealed through data that Dortmund's poor finish was extreme bad luck. They should have finished second based on chance quality. Liverpool's analysts later convinced a reluctant Klopp to sign Mo Salah, using statistical covariance to predict his chemistry with Roberto Firmino. This data-driven approach delivered Champions League and Premier League titles. Soccer's true Moneyball equivalent is Brentford FC. Under owner Matthew Benham, who made his fortune as a data-driven sports bettor, this modest West London club rose from England's third tier to the Premier League in 2021. Despite spending $230 million on wages against $130 million revenue, Brentford covered nearly three-quarters of the deficit through profitable player trading, finding talent in lesser leagues, and trusting diversified crowds over individual scouts' subjective judgments. The revolution accelerated in the 1990s with cheap computing and cable broadcasting. By the 2010s, Arsenal developed expected goals, XG, measuring scoring probability from different positions, now the gold standard. Today's analysts operate in an alchemy phase, conducting secretive experiments seeking competitive advantage. In 1970s Britain, black players endured monkey noises and banana throwing. Yet research showed 1980s teams with more black players achieved better results for the same wages, proving systematic undervaluation. By 2021, over 40% of Premier League players were black. Discrimination persists in coaching. Despite black players comprising 43% of the Premier League, only 10 black managers were appointed in 30 years. Unlike transparent player performance, coaching ability is subjectively assessed, allowing prejudice to flourish. Women's soccer faces worse inequality. When the Women's United Soccer Association struggled financially, investors pulled $100 million, while men's MLS survived despite losing $350 million. Using tennis as a benchmark, women's soccer could generate $12 billion annually in Europe. The U.S. women's national team achieved equal pay in 2022 after a six-year fight. FIFA spends under 2% of development budgets on women's soccer. Soccer proves transparent performance metrics eliminate discrimination. The challenge is extending that transparency to coaching and management and giving women's soccer deserved investment.